exactly on time.
Exactly. You know, I noticed that, but since I want you to be hungry and I want you to want my approval, I'm just going to not even notice the effort you've been making to improve the way you're showing up to this podcast. So
were you like this as a kid?
Like, no.
Oh, so you, yeah. So, cause no, that I was, really would have been fun to hear about.
I think that's why I'm like this, is because I was so afraid of authority. I mean, it comes from a rebellious side. I mean, I know at religious school, that's what they called it, the synagogue. We went on Saturdays and I used to go into the bathroom and we would pee on the radiators because it was like central heating or something. Yeah. I didn't know how much I hated organized religion. I just was following my, yeah.
That's funny. Okay, so we're doing something different.
Yeah, we're doing something different for the sake of our listeners, but also, I mean, this is a shared thing. So we're going to do a little bit of effigy breath, just to say that's the name of the breath work that I've been doing for 35 years. So we're going to do 3 minutes of it with our audience, if you want to join us. And Jason and I are going to do it. And then we're just going to come out of it slowly, and then we'll start the podcast and see what wants to be shared.
And I'm muting myself so that you don't have to listen to me breathe.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and I'm going to mute myself too. And the track I picked has breathing on it, so it is instructive. But basically, this kind of breath work, only three things: breathing on the full, on the inhale, so the focus is on the incoming breath. Your mouth is open, like almost like a slack jaw, just open mouth. So you're breathing into the center of the chest. So it's chest breathing focused on the inhale through the mouth, like you're surprised, almost like, and then you just let it go. Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. So I breathed onto this track, so the track kind of tells you. I suggest to anybody doing it, like, do it lying down, because, you know, sure, you might get a little bit dizzy. You're going to enter a bit of an altered state. We're accessing the life force energy, the thing that you and I, Jason, are always talking about, which is just the thing that's sort of beyond this physical reality, that which we are in essence. So with the breath work that I would do normally, we would do this for an hour. We're just going to do it for 3 minutes, get the energy rolling, and everybody wins. So I don't know if you're muted yet, but do you want to say or ask anything before we begin?
Yeah, I did this a couple years ago for the first time, and to do it for an hour is very different than 3 minutes.
I love that you said a couple years ago. I think it was about 5 years ago.
It was a while, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know which version of Jason that was, but this is a new one, I guess.
Well, when Sarah met you, the people around you were calling you the wizard. So I don't know.
Okay, then not much has changed.
Well, let's see what happens after 3 minutes. Let's see if you're still the wizard. I would just say to anybody doing it, well, even including you, of course, no matter how much we want to awaken or to open, or there's always, because this is what our podcast is about, is always our resistance to what is. So when you start to breathe, there is a part of you that's not going to want to do it, because even the body will kind of react. And that's kind of the game, and the joy of it is just breathe into whatever's there. There's absolutely no danger for us to do it for 3 minutes. So if you feel fear or resistance of the body, whatever it is, just the inhale is the life force. It's God. Like, just take it in and let it move you. All right. So we're both going to mute ourselves, and then I'm going to start the track. And yeah.
Very good.
Okay. Let me just having a little. There we are. Ah. So I would just offer just to feel the energy that's there, and just drop in and just surrender. And we'll give it, 30 seconds or so. Jason, I'll just wait for you whenever you're ready and come back. We'll start. I like to take at least 3 breaths, just deep inhale, really slow through the nose, and just try to let the energy sort of circulate.
Was that really 3 minutes?
Yeah.
That's so fast.
I know. You're very quiet. Just checking if...
That's better now, hopefully.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's better. Yeah, I was surprised too, because, I have been doing it for 35 years, so I can definitely multitask. So I kind of got up at some point. I was like, how much time? It's 2.5 minutes, and had to operate the music and mute it and all that. Yeah.
So how is that different in your experience from meditation, from a cold water plunge, from anything else?
Yeah.
That's supposed to get us in touch with things.
I think it's the best and only question worth asking, because I think the reason why I have stuck with this for 35 years. I mean, I've changed the technique from what my teacher taught me, but basically it's so simple, right? So one part is that it's so simple that you don't need an outfit, you don't need to know anything, you're not taking a stimulant, you're not doing anything, you're just facing the life force. So it's incredibly democratic in that it's equal opportunity for every person, no experience necessary. And I think that, of course, like, I want to eat well, I like to cold plunge. So, you know that, we talked about niacin. I like that too, but it's the reward comes from your effort and nothing else. So to me, what makes it so unique and powerful is it always works to take you in an altered state and to remove the obstacles and barriers to your authentic self. And it requires literally nothing to do it. I mean, I think that if you're going to do it for an hour, you really need to have a guide. So you're having another person, but what's wrong with that? We're not on the planet isolated. We are here to help each other. So having someone there is probably the most unique power a relationship can have, which is somebody that's there to help you awaken. So in that way, I think it just continues to me to be the ultimate technique. But I'll just say one last thing, which is, I've done so much of it. Like, I don't know how many times. I was trying to calculate this week, because I have been doing it with other people, and also I knew we were coming to this, but I know it's in the hundreds for sure. And I don't know how much I need to do it for an hour. And I think as I've gotten older, there were other things that were more important for me to go through besides that. Like, we've talked about martial arts. Like, I feel like, the breath work doesn't, the only training that it's doing for you is reminding you of what's real, which is probably the most important thing you can have. Because if you're not clear, nothing you're going to think of, nothing you're going to choose, nothing you're going to do is going to work. So I think in that way, that's its training. But the development of, like, how we, because I think that's partly what we're talking about in the podcast. Like, we're talking, at least I'm always interested in our conversations a bit about how the how-to of it, because it's out in the world that you have to, where all the challenges really lie. And so the breath, this kind of breath work, it helps you to be clear, but it doesn't tell you how to do anything. It just makes you available. So that's kind of what you're asking. Right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
also
exactly.
I just want to know, cause when was the last time you breathed? It's probably been a couple years, right?
Even sent me a track maybe a year ago.
Yeah.
So just a couple minutes though, not an hour.
Yeah. Well, how was that for you?
Sorry?
How was that for you, the 3 minutes?
It was cool. I mean, I like that feeling. My wife did not like that feeling for some reason. But I wanted to comment on the whole idea of the guide thing because it reminds me of kind of like midwifery, which my wife was for a long time, a midwife.
Why do you say was? Because you said was last week.
Well, she doesn't go to births anymore at the moment, at least.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So she's living a very different life.
Yeah, yeah.
At the moment. But if you watched what was going on when she went to a birth, for the most part, with rare exception, it looked like she wasn't doing anything.
Yeah.
And when there was really so much going on, which is kind of like what you guys do when you guide people through this, right? Because you're not really cheerleaders. Like there's a profound kind of skill and ability to be present enough to perform the role that this is. And when like the average untrained eye looks at it, they don't get it, which I think is probably not surprising.
Well, I would say actually I am a cheerleader because I think that people are like Maren said, she doesn't like it. And if I was with her, I'd want to her to feel loved and supported to want to enter into whatever the I don't like is about.
Yeah.
So I do think cheerleader, but I would say, you know, the hardest thing with training people at the beginning is that everything that's going, for the most part, everything that's going on is invisible. It is in the inner world. I mean, sometimes people are moving around or they're crying or they're expressing something and you can kind of see it, but most of it is unseen. So when people are saying, well, what do I do? Like to someone learning to be a facilitator, like, well, what would I do? Or how do I know what's going on? That's the trick of it. And then I think it is a birthing. I mean, a method of this back was popular in the 70s was called rebirthing. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that a midwife and a breath facilitator is very similar because you're trying to bring this thing out through a small portal. Yeah. There's a lot of obstacles going on and the body needs to do it and wants to do it, but also kind of doesn't want to do it. Like, and so the facilitator's role is so that you don't go through it alone, but that you go through the path of least resistance for the best and strongest outcome. And I think definitely 10,000 people I've breathed, but like all the years of working with people, I just breathed someone last night in person, which I generally don't. I'm sort of like Maren. I don't really work with people too much anymore, not with breath work and certainly not in person. But it is about what the power I have to not do anything and be present for all that is happening and be the one that's saying, yes, yes, everything is, I'm yes to everything that's happening. Because when you're first going through things, when you're first going through any transformation of any kind, whatever kind of work you're doing on yourself, there's some yeses and lots of no's. And a lot of the no's, you don't even know you have them. Because you always in your storytelling on the podcast will say, you know, 20 years ago, and I thought this and I thought that. Like you are always looking back and talking about how no you were. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing that this reminded me of, even though it was only 3 minutes, was that the challenge really is staying present when that amount of energy is flowing. Like you realize again, just like birth, the reason I talk about birth all the time is because we've been living it for the last 25 years. So like, but how someone gives birth is kind of how they live, and how someone does this is kind of how they live. And I would have these moments, I remember with Sarah, where we were in the middle of it, and like periods of time would go by, and where did I go? I don't even know, but I wasn't there, you know? And so you take that back into your life and you're like, man, I do that all over the place. So to stay present for that whole hour is really quite a feat.
You know, well, there's a couple interesting points, and then I think I have something I really want to process with you here, but I'll first say, you know, part of the there is a value in the breath work of going away, because sometimes in the conscious act of doing it, what needs to be encountered, arrived at, won't happen when the conscious self is even doing the breath really fully.
Yeah.
So I've learned over the years, because my teacher, you know, he was very adamant, like, Gabe, always be breathing, you know, and he had all these ways of, like, you know, making people stay awake. But I've learned that sometimes the biggest things happen if you go away. But on the other hand, the breathe how you live thing, I mean, it was a saying that I came up with that somebody quoted me on, and I, that the breathe in the breath how you live in your life, because I didn't know, but I could see that the way, what people told me about their life and what I observed when I was in conversation with them was exactly, there was a version of it in the pattern and the way that they were going about it. And for a lot of people, yes, they're either asleep or awake in their life. So that, and I think that's what you're referring to, but also I think that when you, like, I think one of the goals of our life, as we evolve and we start to really clear out trauma and we become more the person we're meant to be, is the joy and the ecstasy and the exaltation of being awake and aware and not being bound by a matrix, any matrix. Because if matrix just means like a pattern, right? If you're not bound by a pattern, or an unconscious pattern, it's very easy to not want to do anything. Like, it's very easy to lose your pressure and your intensity to want things, because the joy of feeling awake is enough. So oftentimes when people start to really wake up in the breath, they drift away at the same time.
Yeah.
And I feel like, if there's a value to our podcast and to our conversation, and I think how we got to the podcast was through our relationship, is that I find myself at some of my most awake when I'm with you. And I want to be on fire for my life. I don't want to just, drift. Even though I feel very awake, there can be a falling asleep while you're awake. So
yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's probably a spectrum. Like there's that flash when you quote unquote wake up, whatever that means for you in whatever degree.
Yeah.
And it takes a while for you to process your reality from that new level of consciousness.
Yeah.
And during that process, it seems like some things no longer have value.
Yeah.
But if you keep, and maybe they don't, but if you keep going,
yeah,
then you start seeing things differently and you remember like where value can be. And so it's kind of like this spiral that you're going around that never ends, which is why we keep doing stuff like this, because I can speak from my own experience. Mm-hmm. It wears off, right? Something happens. And so you need, this is a process. This is not an event.
I breathe every day, not for an hour, but enough. And I started doing that in 2017, and I've done more in the last couple of years. And I feel like I do it first thing in the morning when I get up, and lately I've been doing it in bed before I get up, because things just accumulate. There are just so many patterns that are still there. I feel them in my body, like, because also with age, like the pattern, the mechanical parts wear out, but also some of the patterns that make you like gravitationally kind of getting pulled into the ground, so to speak. You can feel that the body gets heavy in a certain way. So I breathe every day because of what you're saying, like, because it's the clarity and the feelings, they wear off, and you have to keep working on conditioning yourself in a new way. So
what would you say has been the biggest transformation for you after 30 plus years of a process like this? Can you point to one thing?
Oh, wow. Well, I think there's two things that I want to share, because I was thinking earlier, I know what I want to talk to Jason about. And both of the things, well, one is the answer to your question, but then there's the thing I want to talk about, and both of them are in the shadow. So the things that kind of I don't really want to talk about. So I feel like, let's talk about them. So the first is, if I really look at my life and say, what was the biggest hurdle and pattern, addiction, if you will, and I'll say addiction, meaning if everybody has something that they've used in their life to avoid the confrontation with the changes that need to happen, the confrontation with the traumatized conditioned parts. For me, 100%, it would be my relationship with women, starting with my mother, obviously. And so I've had a lot of relationships, and every relationship had this very dramatic effect. But you know, my first wife, Rebecca, we're good buds. We met 35 years ago. So right at the beginning of that journey, we met my teacher together. We moved to California together. So she was, you know, instrumental in taking that journey and starting that journey with me. But I got married more than once, and I've had lots of relationships. But every relationship in some way had something to do with the part of me that was seeking that freedom and God through relationships, but not realizing that what I was really doing was I was trying to find a woman to make me feel a certain way.
Yeah.
And the last relationship, the serious relationship I had, which ended 10 years ago, and then when you said, what's the most transformational thing? And she's the only person who left me instead of me leaving her. And she did it in a very dramatic way. She was basically left town for the summer, went back to where she was from, God had an affair, came back, we were living together and married for a year. And she just said, I'm moving back to this place. I'm just trying not to give too many details. But anyway, and then I didn't really, over 24, she didn't want to work on it, whatever. I mean, we had problems, but the thing is, this was not how I necessarily wanted to end. She was unwilling to have she just said, it's over. I'm not. And it was very out of the blue, seemingly. And I had to leave town. I left town and I never saw her again. So we'd been together 5 years and we had one conversation all of a sudden. And I found there was another person involved, and she was a lot younger than me and just wanted to go off that person. It was the most dramatic thing that ever happened to me. And I would say it was really traumatic. But up to that point, and even just how I got in that relationship, but it's just like, as I said, my addiction was getting in relationships for reasons that were an avoidance of the responsibility for my own well-being, and just taking this wound and presenting it to women. and getting a relationship over that. And anyway, I breathed every day at that time, which I'd done many times, but every time I've done it, you know, the years would pass, another thing would be revealed. And I had this one experience that, and I called my ex, Rebecca, and she, because it doesn't matter, she came over one day and we breathed together. We lay down, and about 45 minutes in, nothing was happening. I was like, I think we're done. And she said, and she's very witchy. Like, she's got this incredible kind of, and she just knew something. She said, no, let's just go a couple more minutes. And all of a sudden, and remember, I breathed already like 500 times. So I'd pretty much gone through everything you could go through. I didn't think there was much left, but that breathing every day up to that point saved me. And I realized that all the trauma and drama and heartache and pain and suffering that I had in every relationship that would take me down and make me unfunctional, I was breathing every day really full. And I could, I realized, sorry, I'm all over the place here, but just, it's hard to tell this story. But one is that my mind, which had always sort of threatened me and took me down, and like, I could, by doing the breath work, I was fully able to realize that I was, that the I that I am, the soul am, is not the mind, and that I could direct my mind instead of it controlling me. And that was the end, really the end of me living inside of a wound that I wanted somebody else to heal. But that particular day, which is one of the last big breaths that I did for an hour, so we went and breathed for a few more minutes, and all of a sudden I hit something and I started screaming my head off like it wasn't even human. Like, I couldn't, what was happening in me was so, it was like an animal that was being killed or tortured. Like, I didn't even feel human. And this went on for about, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes. I had absolutely no control over it. And it was so primitive. And I came out of that never to kind of go back to the life of acting from a wound. And since that day, you know, because I've talked about this with clients, like I don't have many moments where I'm not clear. I mean, there's an evolving process within myself, and I'm still learning, and I still, you know, grapple with all kinds of things, but I don't make deleterious mistakes out of a wound that I used to do at all, almost never. There's a couple things, a couple choices I made in conversations. Two of them in particular, one involved running into my ex. Sorry, the smoke alarm just went off. I don't know if you can hear that. But it was just something I said in the moment, which had no effect, but I could feel it was coming from a wounded place. But basically, suffice to say that that was the end of the life of being asleep in any way. So now, you know, I'm still working on myself, but I don't feel there's any more sleepy parts.
Yeah. Which is pretty amazing to be able to say.
You know, here's the funny thing. Yeah, and when you ask what's transformational, I wasn't really thinking about the breath work, but the breath work has, at every point that I've been in a low point, the breath work was the medicine that healed me, and it was why I kept doing it with other people, because I believe in it. And yeah. I do think that if I ever run into any trouble at all, I can just go back and breathe, and things are instantly clear to me. But what I was really owning was that the biggest lessons of my life were not inside of the breath work. They were inside my life. So I don't, much as I, there's two things that I'm saying today that I wouldn't necessarily want to I wouldn't necessarily say in a conversation or in public. And one is that, like, oh, the breath work is the answer, but it is, it was for me. And the other is I wouldn't want to tell anybody about my state because it would come across as arrogant. And also it's not like I sit around thinking about how awake I am. I feel blessed and also know that I've earned, you know, some combination of luck and work, some place of clarity right now that I never had before. And, you know, in some ways it brings tremendous responsibility, especially when I'm helping other people, which maybe leads me to the second thing I wanted to bring up, unless you want to comment on that.
One thing that came to mind was, I think it's cool that you could look at that or anyone who does this and say, I did that. Like, the breath didn't save you. You did. It was a vehicle. Yeah. And that's amazing to be able to feel about yourself, to feel like you're your own answer. Which, where can you find that in today's world, really?
Well, I think that's why, this is a perfect segue to what I want to talk to you about. First of all, when I say it's democratic, that's what I mean. It's like it's fair to everybody because everybody can have what I have. And I'm not saying I didn't have to live through what I am saying. I had to live through my mistakes in life. And it wasn't an easy path or something like that. It's more what I'm saying is the breathwork is a medicine that works, and it works because you do it and you get the result. And if I'm facilitating you, you're not at the end going to go, wow, you're the greatest facilitator. You're going to go, I can't believe I did this for myself.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know anything out there that is quite the same as this.
Which is also why it is hard to sell to masses of human beings.
Well, don't get ahead of yourself, because that's what I want to talk to you about.
Nobody wants to buy that.
I was having this thought all this week, maybe because I knew we were going to do this, and I briefed someone yesterday. And here's what I said, there's two things in my shadow. One is just owning, like, my relationship with women was my primary addiction. I was never someone who drank or did a lot of drugs or whatever. I mean, I did those things, but I never did them as an addict. But relationships. But the other thing is, so I had a vision many years ago. And when I started to, you know, I was a musician, but when I moved from music to breathwork, it wasn't a conscious choice. It is what happened, because I was so zealous. If you look up Sagittarius's, which I am, I was a zealous Sagittarius who just wanted everybody in the world to know what I knew from the breathwork. You know, I was a young person doing the breathwork, but it was still the same thing. I was attracted to the intoxication of the breathwork, not because I was too young to understand things like having a process, and I didn't have any discipline growing up, so I was just far away from that. But the breathwork, the liberation that the breathwork gave me, I wanted this to, at first, just share with everyone I know. And then later, when I started to travel and become popular, I had had a vision. I think I told you this, you know, I saw myself at Madison Square Gardens with 10,000 people in a live band doing breathwork. And I forgot all about it until, you know, maybe 10 years ago, and remembered again. And I have felt like it was my mission. Like, if I had a purpose in life and a power, it would be to bring that out to the world. And it didn't happen. And I know that doesn't mean it's not going to happen, but I'm sick in my age right now, 62. Like, I'm healthy in body and mind. So I'm not, when I talk to other people my age, I see struggles with energy and health and mental clarity. So I'm not having that problem. But something that happens with aging is you do lose enthusiasm for going out into the world and telling unconscious people about the opportunity to awaken. Like part of me is like, well, why should I do that? Like I did it for years and it nearly killed me, you know, and when COVID began, which was around the time that I met you, the last 6 years, like I can't muster the motivation or the enthusiasm to fulfill that dream, and the universe didn't provide it. And I struggle with that. And I want to just hear what you might have to say about it. And the reason why I say it's in the shadow is that we're doing a podcast called The Authority in the Mirror, and it is about like you authoring your life. This is something that I still think it's the most profound thing. I think if we could get people to do this and it became like yoga, it would literally change the world. And I see people being able to, who do beautiful things out in the world and able to find an audience for that. But that didn't happen for me. So I'm sort of admitting that this is where I'm not clear, because I'm saying you author your life. I'm saying that I feel very awake and clear and peaceful, and I have a tremendous power and ability to help in the world. But it's not really happening, and I don't really have a lot of motivation for it. And I'm kind of wondering why this didn't find an audience through me.
Maybe if we are able to be the author of our own lives, that means that we get to author the part that we get to author. And the other part, which is in this kind of hard to understand, mysterious, unknowable part of reality, perhaps it's just a back and forth dance with that. And so we author our part from within, we bring it out, and then we look at what happens and we see the response. And so the subtitle to You Author Your Own Life could be, and you get what you get.
Right. I guess there's three pieces here. Piece number one is like, I know you help businesses, so I'm wondering if I was a business, what would you say to me? But before you answer that, so hold that piece. You know, I'm a manifester in human design. I manifest and I have visions and I manifest things, and I've done it a million times. And it's shocking how easy it is for me to do that in some ways. And yet with this, which feels like the most important thing, I have not done that. So it is, you get what you get. But this is such a beautiful thing, and it should happen, and it would be of such great benefit. And I have my whole heart in it. But I also recognize that the work of working with people, I mean, maybe I'm about to answer my own question. Like it's a lot of work to work with people. And I'm not sure I'm either designed or desirous of doing that. I want it to happen. I want people to do it, but it's not necessarily that I want to be the one to be leading it. Because so I guess I'm saying two things. One is I have a power to manifest, and I've manifested almost everything that was really important to me. And it's like it kind of happens so quickly for me without resistance. And yet in this one thing, which would be such a blessing to humanity, it has not happened. And the other thing to say is that, you know, my energy doesn't feel, and I did read about, sorry, I'm tangenting all over the place, probably because of the breath work, but that the manifestors, you know, they reached their peak in the late 1700s, and now like we built the world, now we're in a different time, and it's like we're just here to do whatever we want. That maybe I don't want to do this, like maybe I don't want to build anything, like because I'm not really actually meant to do that. I'm just meant to be the free soul that I am, and I did liberate myself, so maybe I just think I want that, but I don't.
I've worked with a lot of businesses over the years, and I've done it a long time, and I've collected a lot of businesses that should exist but just can't. And I've come in contact with plenty of businesses that shouldn't have a right to be there that are wildly successful.
Yeah.
And when you see that many stories, you start to get, you start to lose your attachment to them.
Yeah.
And you see that everyone is living kind of their own adventure, and some adventures go one way and some adventures go the other way.
Yeah.
And there certainly is a glut of the world needs this people, but the world doesn't want it. And I think the only way that you remain sane in something like that, like, you know, you can ask yourself, what is enough? Like, look at how it transformed your life.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Even the 3 minutes we did, like, because it was very focused and I was doing it with you. When we came out of it, that's why I wanted to talk about this, because that is the first thing that rose up in my mind when I came out of it. So there is something that wants to be said. So it's still transforming me.
Yeah, which is amazing. And so, yeah. But our ego can't be okay with this enough story, especially if we have to pay bills, right? There is this whole practical side of things. Like, yes, I help businesses, but I'm also very practical. So like, I have to be strategic about the businesses I help. I can't help 100% of the businesses, I call it the hump, who haven't gotten over the hump, who haven't gotten to a point where the world has said, yeah, you're going to make it. If I depend on those to try to feed my family, it's rough because I'm not God. Right.
Yeah.
And so business is this weird thing where we have been taught that we should be able to control things we can't. Mm. And until that like cancerous mind virus goes away, I don't think our ego is going to let this kind of stuff go. But I think that's the only solution, is that whole story has to be dropped, because it takes a lot of energy to hold it, and it's constant comparison, and it leads nowhere but misery, except for a very few people. And then we tell stories about what that means. And so all I have at the end of the day is the work that I'm here to do, which I feel in my heart. And that's what I do. And I have to figure out how to do that to feed people. But then the minute I get people fed, I can figure out how to do it so it's purely for my own satisfaction. And it's a mess of making all that up at once.
Well, thank you. That was so good, what you just said. I'm realizing, for one, I just took my medicine with you. And in that 3 minutes of breathing, what happened to me is the same thing that's happened to me hundreds of times when I breathe, which is my dog came in and out of the room, that last week we talked about complaints. So I'm walking around this week and I'm having this thought about, like, I feel the peace and the simplicity of my life. And then I have this thought, like, I wonder why it didn't happen. But secretly, there's a complaint. And I'm realizing it from what you were talking, from everything you just said, and I'll say why in a moment. But the complaint is, because you did say to me, look how much the breath's done for you. Like, I have a story, whether I know it or not, that says this is how I think it's supposed to happen. I mean, there's no other way to put it. That's my, and my complaint is it didn't happen that way. And when you sort of brought me to the gratitude, but also the reason why I had that thought come up is because it, the thought of like, why didn't it happen for me is other. It's in the negative. It doesn't, it's not what I ultimately experience every single time out of the breath. It's never not happened, is a sense of what's right. I mean, at points, especially when I was younger, I used to hear voices and all kinds of stuff, never negative, just like, this is the truth, like the truth speaking to me. And I'm so blessed with that. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, even as we're talking, like, I should just do some more breathing. Anytime I think something should be different, I should just lay down and do some breathing, because I realized that what the breath work did for me was bring forward the entity of the lie. Like, it's like a parasite. Like, 'cause that story, much as I have some love and think something I want to give to the world, there's something attaching to me that is a complaint. And I think where this is so tricky is that when you're young, that complaint is plus hormones motivates you to get out there and do something. The lion's chasing you, so you better start running. But when you get older and you start to see how the process works, because you said you have so many businesses you know that should exist but don't, and so many that shouldn't exist but do, you start to accept that the world is not clear or fair to you. Like you don't know, you're not God. And you begin to work with what is. So
yeah, I think the only way that you, or I think the reason that you do the work to drop the story is because that having that story is you making a choice about how you're authoring your life. You're choosing to do that story. And
yeah,
which is really irresponsible given the gravity of the responsibility we have to author our own life. So, you know, I look out at the world and I know that I can be free if I can truly feel that I'm getting what the universe wants right now.
Yeah.
And be okay with that. And it doesn't mean I can't try to change it in the next moment, but if I have resistance to it now, that's part of my authorship of what's coming. And it's a stupid thing that we do to ourselves.
And hold on. I want to stop for a second and go back, because you said a Jason bumper sticker moment. And I feel like we should make a bumper sticker. If you do, I'll definitely put it on my car. I'm getting what the universe wants.
Could any sane person argue otherwise? Like,
but no, I've never heard anybody say that. I'm getting what the universe wants. It's so hilarious. And because it's so profound, like you are the universe. The universe is getting what you want. Whatever you think of it, the universe is getting what it wants. Like, that's so deep.
Well, it's the only place I found freedom, because everything else just leads to endless lack, actually. Not about money, even about everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel emancipated today because I feel like, you know, the last time I breathed for an hour I was trying to remember, it was about 3 months ago, but I hadn't done it in a while, like a couple of years. And I lay down and breathe, and I remember what came up for me at the end of it. In essence was, you think like, you don't need anything. You're so happy right now. You got everything you wanted in your life. Like, enjoy it. I mean, just the way my life's set up, if I were to describe it, it's like, it's what I dreamed about. And so I felt a wave of gratitude and motion to just really appreciate what I have. But I'm coming back today to like seeing, like you said, it wears off. And today it was like, oh, Elijah thinks he still needs to be a rock star or something, or just do something important in the world. And, you know, I never liked being important. It was stressful. Being popular is stressful. And so why am I complaining about this? Like, it's, if God doesn't want this to happen, so what?
Yeah. See, I would even go further. I mean, how can we even separate ourselves from God, right? So we're kind of talking about ourselves at the same time that we're talking about
illusion. The eye that we're talking about is the illusion.
Maybe it's supposed to wear off, so that God that created all this, who apparently wants to know itself, or so we've been told, can have that experience again. Like, I don't know. I don't know the truth. I just know how to be miserable. I'm really good at that, and things that make it not so miserable.
I think I've said this before, but I'll say it again, because we're saying the Sufis have the word lila, which means play. And Rumi's poem would say, you know, sugar couldn't taste its sweetness, so it created the ant. And it's like, you know, the universe was, God was lonely, so he created duality. Or like, there's a, I don't know, Rumi said that, but there is a play, which is that this separation that we have, which is an illusion, creates a longing for that reunification. It's just God playing.
You can feel that even in 3 minutes of breathing, you know, that,
yeah,
that is what I feel. It's like all of a sudden everything goes away and you're left with life force that actually is, it must be in you all the time. If breathing can bring it out, then it's got to be there all the time. And so it's like this amnesia we have that this helps to reset.
I think the breathing, because breath is life, it's the strongest drug that is out there. Right at the beginning, you asked me, like, what's the difference between this and other things? It's like, is there any product more powerful than that? I mean, you could take Western medicines and stuff, like, they're powerful, but not necessarily to awaken your consciousness. But what is more fundamental and more powerful to being alive, to the fullness of life, than the breath you take? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I always remember a meditation teacher that is a friend of ours always saying, like, when people ask him about ayahuasca or whatever the current fad is, and he'll just say, why would you do that when you can just do it yourself?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I'll be back next week with other unpopular advice.
Yeah. I wonder if we should do this again next week.
Maybe we can chat.
Okay. I'll talk to your staff.
Yeah, my people. Yeah, you got a hold of him. All right. See you next time.
Got me working, boss man. Working round the clock. I want me a drink of water, but you won't let Elijah stop. Big boss man. Work hard.